This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
And we're welcoming into the studio a couple of civil celebrants. We'll be talking all things civil celebrant this hour on our In Focus.
Can I crack the joke now and saying we're going to be very civil? Yeah, okay. Let's move on to say hello to Deb.
Tell us to laugh. Welcome to the studio.
I wasn't expecting anything. All right, now tell us, Deb Schneider and David Holder, who many people will know.
Other way around.
I can't
remember. We might be diverse, but not quite that.
Okay, let's try again. Deborah Holder and David Schneider. Are you sure? Well, they may be by the end of the program. No, I feel terrible about that. I hate getting names wrong, and there's possibly nothing worse in life than getting someone's name wrong, I reckon.
Certainly at a funeral.
Yes. So,
or a wedding.
Yeah.
It's happened to both of you?
No.
It's one of the great no-nos in our industry, but it happens a lot, and a lot of couples that we talk to would say that that's been their experience, where they've witnessed that happening elsewhere. So,
yeah, that would be an uncomfortable experience for everyone.
That's not ideal.
Well, you're losing your sense of – you've just suddenly been invalidated, really, haven't you, when someone gets your name wrong. Yeah. So when you brought up the subject of funerals, we're talking about civil celebrants and bad jokes for me. But it's not always about the balloons and the happy, wonderful shoes and being thrown off past the cars and what crap. It's about serious matters in other areas.
It is. One of the things that I'm finding is that whilst everyone wants to be married or to have their commitment ceremony, the funerals is something where they also want someone to really look after them in that regards. And I know that Deb's done a lot of them, which I'm looking to get into it. So I'd certainly love to hear her comments on it.
I think what I've discovered in the 18 months I've been in the funeral industry, not specifically, but that's certainly my passion. And I think that what is lovely about what's happening now, when more and more civil celebrants are in the industry, is that whether it's a religious or a civil ceremony, the benchmark has been really raised so that couples and families know that they can customise a ceremony to really reflect the individual that they're saying goodbye to. And in the past, we didn't have that option. We were very much dictated to by religious doctrine, and that's absolutely fine for those who choose that. But even now, I'm finding that people who want religious elements incorporated into their ceremonies are able to do that both in a religious environment or with a civil celebrant. Because they know they've got the right to ask, whereas once upon a time they just didn't think that was their entitlement. But they are the clients, and you want to do everything possible to give someone a really good farewell.
Mm. Well, and there's such a short turnaround time to organise that too. So how do you actually manage to get a funeral together?
Yeah, and Dave, by all means, chip in. So you get a call either from families who have you're connected to, and they want you to guide them, or you get a call from the funeral directors that you've established a relationship with for a booking, and you've got usually about 3 days to turn it round. And so you get to their door as quickly as you can, but respecting the fact that they've been through a very busy time, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, but there's a lot of business with death. They've got to engage a funeral director, they have to make decisions about coffins and the style of funeral and the type of expense that is incurred. There's a lot of business attached to it. Then there's the emotion and the preparation. So I try and give a bit of time before I beat a path to their door, and then sit and talk for an hour or two, and then we start usually an email relationship and a final discussion on the phone, so that by the time we meet at the chapel or at the grave or wherever they are going to hold the ceremony, we've known each other quite a bit during that exchange.
Now, David, this is an area of interest for you that you're moving into. It's a funeral is as much a moment to remember for people as a wedding is, really, in a way, isn't it? It's something that people.
It is. One of the things that I found was in speaking to a funeral director, he approached me to get into the funerals because he was saying that he watches some celebrants cringe when they do a gay funeral. I'm thinking that is just so wrong, because whilst it's a sad time for everyone, we also want to be celebrating the person's life, and you want someone who's going to be passionate about it. So I think choosing the right celebrant as well is very important, not just for their commitment ceremony or their wedding, but also for the funeral as well.
Now, it's my understanding that you don't actually have to be a registered civil celebrant to conduct a funeral. Is that
correct?
Yeah. So, but most funeral celebrants are registered civil celebrants, do you think? Or
you would think so. Most people, when they become a sort of a marriage celebrant, they're then entitled to do all sort of ceremonies. But if someone was just a civil celebrant and not a marriage celebrant, they can do all ceremonies except marriages.
And what brought you into civil celebrancy, David?
Well, I'd have to say that it was my nephew, when he had a horrific experience with his celebrant, where she gave him the wrong vows to read. There were letters missing off it. He couldn't read them. I had another friend who their celebrant actually printed off three pages of the one page of the ceremony instead of three separate pages.
So it was through those all.
It was the complete lack of service and the poor quality. And I've been given seminars a lot for clients over the years, so I love the public speaking. And I've just found it absolutely fantastic to be in. I've done quite a few commitment ceremonies, so I love dealing with the gays and lesbians. I love it. I love helping them. And a lot of celebrants who are straight have not wanted to do it. They've actually treated them quite poorly.
So there's this issue that we still can't get legally married in this country, which I'm sure you have to deal with. Deb, what got you into the business in that sense?
I think that...
How do you deal with it too?
How do I deal with it? I absolutely love what I do, and I feel so lucky that every day of the week I'm reminded of the preciousness of people's lives. And I think for me, having a specific focus around funerals, though not disregarding marriages and naming ceremonies and commitment ceremonies, they are wonderful occasions and absolutely to be celebrated. But I think having had a 14-year relationship with a good Greek girl has taught me a lot about celebrating rituals.
I'll bet. Yeah.
And coming from a very skip background, hello, Mary. I'm reminded how much we lack rituals in our very skip and Anglo culture. And coming into her vibrant culture, everything is marked with an occasion, usually around food, but also around family and celebration and making the most of every time you've got together. And that really inspired me to take it a little bit further. Like David, I love public speaking. I've been involved in training and that environment for a long time. So it just seemed like a great way to engage with people at incredibly important times of their lives. And I just love the people that I meet, both living and in their absence. I get to just experience life that has been very different to my own, and I feel very grateful.
It would be a very close connection you have to get with, well, in the state of a funeral, sometimes you might have to get close very quickly.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I think that that's what draws me to the funeral industry. There's no pretense. You are meeting people in a very raw and vulnerable state. You have an enormous responsibility, and it is such a privilege to share intimate parts of their lives over a very short period of time. And I've had the great pleasure of having connections with those people beyond the immediate ceremony, and many of those family members that I've been then asked to conduct naming ceremonies and weddings and other, you know, joyous occasions as well. So it is a continuum, and I think that's the beauty, is that it reminds us that dying is part of living, and it's just one of those, it's every day that we've got to not take anything for granted.
Last year, I actually went to a funeral to support a friend. I didn't know the person who passed away, but what I felt at the end of the service, I knew that person. And to me, that's what a celebrant needs to do, is to really make sure that in that 30-minute service, they're able to bring across to everybody there the full life of that person. And I walked away from that service knowing the person who passed away and wishing I'd actually met them. It was such a good service.
I think that's too often the case, and perhaps let's hope it's these are days gone by in sort of more religious funeral services where you really feel, you know, nice commonplace things were said about the deceased and the loved one and stuff, and that was it. And you thought, well, this is, as you say, Deb, this is no send-off.
Mm-hmm.
This is no celebration of a person's life. It's now a year since the very untimely passing of Alan Watts, and you were at his funeral, conduct his funeral, and the funeral of his partner who died, Chris, who died a very short time before. Horrible conjunction of events. Alan used to be a solicitor, used to come on to Joy and talk about it, and was coincidentally my solicitor for many, many years.
And ours.
And I was actually away from Melbourne at the time of Alan's funeral, but I was very impressed with the funeral you conducted for Chris, his partner.
Thank you.
And in fact, you stood very much aside, I thought. You didn't seem to play a very large role. There was very much Alan at the front.
Mm.
How do you support a partner to talk about in a time of grief? How do you support a partner so that they're able to say what they want to say at that sort of time?
Mm. Well, I mean, Alan being the extraordinary person that he was, that was catharsis for him, and he was channeling every bit of love and emotion. It's not everybody's... not everybody can step up to the mark in the way that that remarkable man did on that day. However, what I do when I'm with families is that I do try and encourage them to give it a go. I am very pleased with the skills that I bring to the table to conduct a ceremony, in saying that there are limits. I don't know the deceased, and no one knows them like those that love them the most. And so wherever possible, I do try and encourage them to give it a go, to say something, if not that, to write something down. And if they do start to talk and to present and can't get through, what I always say to the families that I work with is that, of course, my job is to step up and to support them, but the words are important. Mm. They've written them down. They have expressed them sincerely. And people coming to a ceremony need that for a range of reasons. They don't know every aspect of a person's life. They're there a bit like a jigsaw puzzle, putting those connections together. And as you said, you leave richer for having known that person. And it is a chance to assist them in doing that. But my job is to make that as easy as possible.
And that's what it's like being at a funeral, isn't it? You look around and think, oh, I wonder what that connection, I wonder who they are and how they're connected. And it's quite different from any other sort of way of getting together in many ways.
Oh, it's amazing. I've got to say, one day last year I buried a woman who had four aliases, and people coming to that ceremony did not know the extraordinarily different lives of this extraordinary woman, and they left just with a smile on the face at the way she was able to compartmentalise her life. It was great.
We're talking with, and I shall get this right now, with Deborah Holder and David Schneider, who are both civil celebrants. And up till now, Mayors, we've been talking about celebrating death in many ways, and it's something which we don't talk about very frequently.
No, that's true. Celebrating life.
We won't avoid that topic, but maybe we'll come back and talk a little bit about what else a celebrant does as a civil celebrant.
I don't have my CD in front of me. You've caught me.
I've caught you on the hop.
Soul to Soul, it was. Back to Life.
Back to Life. Well, is there a segue there for us?
Oh, could be. Some of those words might have rung with the topic of today. We're talking to Deb Holder and David Schneider, civil celebrants. We were talking about celebrating life and celebrating death, and we're just starting to talk a bit about, well, same-sex marriage and civil union and all that sort of thing.
And we've had some great interest. Someone want to come live and talk on radio, but you can always send us an SMS on 0427JOY949 or email on air@joy.org.au. Any other way of getting into us, Ms?
The old method of 1300JOY949.
Pick up the phone and talk to Heath.
Yeah, Heath will have a chat to you.
Let's just clarify what a civil celebration is, because people who are heterosexual, who are allowed to get married and get recognised, can go to a church and get married by a priest. But in fact, what is the marriage bit in that?
Well, with the marriage bit, it's called the monotum. That's a legal wording that has to be said to be properly married in the eyes of the law. So with the commitment ceremonies, I conduct the ceremonies as though it was a wedding, and I just omit the legal wording. So I treat them exactly as I do a wedding.
And as a gay woman, Deb, what is that legal? Give it to us. What's the killer?
What's the killer is that we've got to say that we are acknowledging that this is the union of a man and a woman to the exclusion of all others under the law of Australia.
And that's what getting married means in this country.
And yet somehow they let people like you, Nick, and David and I over the net and into the Attorney General's register to conduct these weddings.
So, I was a registered civil celebrant myself. I like to do little weddings with friends and family here and there. But every time I've had to say, well, I have to say this, guys, I say, well, we don't want you to say that. And I say, well, we have to say that.
So how do you get well, you can't get around it legally. You have to say it. And
that's right.
How do you say it without cringing?
Well, it's funny. Sometimes when the couple know that I am gay, they hate that I have to say it. But then when I do say it, they're also smiling at me. And I try not to laugh at the wedding when I'm actually saying it.
Yeah. Every disrespect intended, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people want to make a statement about that and we're absolutely happy to oblige. But it isn't a political day. It is about a celebration of love and commitment, and you want to make that, you know, it is about them. And so you get through that and you build the ceremony. That is the least part of the ceremony, I've got to say. And whilst it's irksome at the moment and we just absolutely keep championing and advocating for change and just for simple choice, you know, we want all couples, regardless of their sexuality and gender identity, to have the same rights as everybody else.
Because regardless of whether you're married in a church or not, this is the civil part of it, the signing of the pieces of paper at the end and the statement, that odious statement that's made. That's what it is. It's not about the religious part or anything else that encompasses it. But, David, you can have anything you like around those little words.
You can. And that's one of the things that with the commitment... Or leave them out. So with the commitment ceremonies, as long as the people want to be committed together, you can do whatever you want with it. And I really enjoy working with the couple so that you can build something special for them.
So how much of your role as a civil celebrant and preparing with people starts looking like becoming a wedding planner? Because I know we're not supposed to be.
Oh, I definitely stay away from it. You do not want to be dealing with the bridezillas. Mm-hmm. So I really avoid being a wedding planner.
But you can get swept up a bit in it, can't you? Because you can start seeing warning signs about that. Oh, we want to do this. And you want to do anything.
Well, I've actually been very lucky, and I've had no problems at all in all the weddings and all the commitment ceremonies. They've all been fantastic, and so I've actually met people that I can refer other couples to because I know the professionalism of them has been fantastic. So I've been very lucky. But Deb, I don't know what sort of dramas you've had, or
not so much dramas, but I do think that the industry, whether it be at a commitment ceremony or a mainstream marriage, it's so commercialised that the necessary arrangements around reception and all the paraphernalia that goes on with getting married or committed almost makes you need to be committed. And it is, I do find, unlike you, David, I do find with some couples, gay or straight, is that you do need to work with them to cut through all of that to get to the heart of the ceremony. Not for long often, but you need to strip back all the busyness that goes around the arrangements that have to be made, and let's say and to really concentrate on that 20 or 30 minutes that you're going to be doing what we consider in our industry, you know, the reason why people are coming, and that is to actually get this couple together. So it does take a little bit of work at times because there's so much involved in holding a big event.
So they may arrive on white horses or whatever they like, but
hummers,
that's but I suppose the heart of it is in the words that are said. I've been to some beautiful celebrations, and the words that really express those two people, and I suppose that's what it comes down to, isn't it?
One of the things that I love is when I do a draft reading for a couple where I've pulled their ceremony together for them, I've actually had couples, be it a bride and groom or two brides or two grooms, I've actually had them cry during the draft reading. And that's when I know that this is really special to them. It's something beautiful, and I really look forward to the day when the ceremony comes around, because I know it's going to be fantastic for both them and also me.
We're talking with Deb and David, and I'm not going to risk any second names there for the moment, being a civil celebrant. And there are many civil celebrants, about 12,000, I think, registered in Australia or something. So there's a lot of people around out there in the business, and we'll have a talk about what that business means in a minute.
We're joined in the studio here with Deb Holder and David Snyder, civil celebrants, and we've had a question actually there, Nick, from someone wondering, how do you become a civil celebrant?
Well, there's actually courses that you do, and to be a civil celebrant and not do marriages, you don't actually have to be licensed. But to do marriages, mm-hmm. you do have to be licensed through the Attorney General's Department. So there are courses available through TAFEs and unis and that sort of thing now. So there's quite a few courses that you can do. It is quite intensive. And then what I found quite harrowing was actually getting through the Attorney General's Department, because that's quite an effort
that's
to get through.
That's the scary bit. So there's a certificate for in marriage celebrancy or something you can do through a registered training organization, RTO, thank you. And I did it online because I thought that was the cheapest way of doing it, and found it actually very difficult because total online studies is hard, and I could have done with more support, I thought.
Much better to do face-to-face.
I had a friend who was doing it part face-to-face and discovered he was learning things that I had no access to, so I thought, not good. But, yeah, the Attorney General, you've got to get it all. You've got this big application process to get right. And if you get one little thing wrong, you go back to the bottom of the pile and it takes 3 months for them to process it.
Well, one of the things that I found with the Attorney General's Department was that once they've approved your application, which they don't tell you, they only tell you if they've knocked it back, they then put it in the bottom drawer for 3 months. It just doesn't move. So if you do have something wrong with it, as you're saying, it does wait another 3 months. Mm. It's incredible.
For me, the challenge was getting my character referees to talk about my genuine commitment to the institution of marriage, which is what is asked of them.
Do you want to be very public about this?
And I had gorgeous people who were able to talk about my passion for relationships, and they left the word marriage out of it because of that monotone that we spoke about before. And there's no doubt that I'm committed to relationships and people publicly in front of people that they love and adore, saying how much they want to go forward together. But I was very grateful for those character references that were able to work in
a
more generic way.
Yeah, genuine. They can't. They make it quite clear they're not allowed to just send a template out to three
Definitely,
people and ask them.
Yeah.
You've got to be very considered, so you have to choose very wisely. David, you were talking before about in Victoria on our relationships register. I mean, I have no objection to performing a marriages, and it would be great if marriage became available to everybody. But we really are running a dual system here in Victoria with some more. Why can't they equalise these things?
Well, one of the things you find is that the commitment ceremonies are registered under the state legislation, but marriages are registered under the federal legislation. So until you get the two parties actually working closely together and in line with each other, I think we are still going to be running that dual system for quite a while. Mm.
But there's also cost inequities in there, you found.
There is. One of the things I followed up this week with births, deaths and marriages was to see how many relationships are now registered on the relationships register, and it's now at 270. But what I asked the Attorney General's Department, Rob Hull's area, why is there an inequity in the cost? Mm. To register a marriage is free, but to register a commitment relationship for a gay or a lesbian person is actually $180. Mm. So I asked about the discriminatory effect of that, and I was told that it's on a full cost recovery basis. And I said, well, why aren't the straights charged? And they said, well, that comes under federal legislation, and we wish we could charge, but we can't.
So red tape and stuff, and we don't want to be victims, but sometimes we do feel a little put upon. We always seem to be putting in deeper into our pockets than the straight community for lots of things, I think. Now, you've got, I've got your card here, David, and you've got commitment ceremonies, renewal of vows, and baby naming ceremonies. Are we having a baby boom in the gay lesbian world?
Well, it is amazing how many couples do have them. And I've sort of been watching someone on my Facebook who has become a donor and found out recently that he's going to be a proud father of twins. And I just think that is fantastic. And he found the sex of them the other day. There are more and more couples out there who are having children, and they do want their naming ceremonies for their kids, and to them it's something beautiful. It's exactly the same as them with their straight friends. They want to celebrate the birth of their children, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that at all.
I mean, there's no reason why two mothers can't have their kids baptized in the church. Don't suppose all churches would refuse that? I mean, some would.
I think a lot of churches would actually refuse it.
But so there are options at least. Deb, do you do things like baby naming things?
I do. Mm. I do. And again, we spoke earlier about the importance of rituals. And, you know, too often we only get together at funerals. Mm. And we always say to each other, gosh, we should catch up more. And this is another perfect example of where you can bring your A-list together and you can form anything you like from, you know, candle ceremonies to people. The last naming ceremony I spoke at and conducted was people just bringing together hopes and wishes for this beautiful baby and declaring that as we lit a taper and put the little hopes and wishes into a chalice for them to keep as a keepsake. And just to hear people's stories and their ideas about what they wish and hope, it's pretty moving, and people do it in a number of ways. And again, we'd really encourage individuals to just be creative because they can do whatever they jolly well like.
So what's been each of your personal favourite ceremonies or celebrations that you've been involved with?
Well, I did one last year. Hello, Chris. Hello, Joel. And it was absolutely amazing. It was a full black tie affair. I really thought we were in one of the Emirates marquees at Melbourne Cup. It was held at the backyard of a house, and it was all black lace and chandeliers and everyone in black tie. It was beautiful. It was fantastic. So they're the ones you really do look forward to. Deb?
Oh, look, you take something from everyone that you do. They all have moments where it just melts you. Mm. I think because we were talking before about just the genuine nature of what you're entering into, and that really impresses me. I've got to say, I do love exotic locations, and I have had the very good fortune to be on a beach at Koh Samui, to be heading to the Cook Islands next September, and to be heading to Jamison into the High Plains next weekend, and to Hamilton Island in June, and they're very lovely because you get to tag a little holiday on the end. And Mary loves being a handbag, and I couldn't agree more. But yeah, it's just the moment, I think, where you really see people realising the exceptional opportunity that they're being given. They've got their nearest and dearest around them, and you just can't help be melted no matter how actively involved you are in this industry.
Look, I agree. I mean, cynicism just disappears, doesn't it, about the whole thing. That the last wedding I did was down at Torquay on the beach in a cove there, and they'd upturned a surfboard for a little altar and stuff like that. And it was really lovely, and it became a very, very powerful moment, and I think that's really what it's about, is that moment becoming real at that time.
And it is such a privilege because it's theatre. Mm. You enter into this theatre and it's your job to choreograph and to make sure it flows and that there is that moment of pathos as well as celebration. And what an opportunity you get each time that you meet with a couple, hear their dreams and help them shape that into reality.
At commitment ceremonies, same-sex commitment ceremonies, do you find that the crowds or the people, the black tie people, are they different to what you might get at your average family wedding?
Well, I think you can have a lot more of them rolling up straight from maybe the laird or somewhere. But no, look, I find that the people respect it for what it is, which is a beautiful ceremony. They do treat it with the respect as they would at a wedding. So I find that there's actually no difference. Everyone dresses up and no one's in jeans and that sort of thing. They do really respect it.
Look, we're going to run out of time, so do you want to comment on that, Deb? Because I was actually going to ask, what should a person, when someone's looking for a celebrant, what should they be looking for and looking out for? Because we do hear horror stories. I mean, how do you find one? And then just what do you ask of a celebrant?
Well, the first thing is to look in the also directory, of course. But I think the people need to just chat to the celebrant over the phone about their views on a commitment ceremony. Certainly heard the horror stories, and I'm sure Deb has, where the celebrants, when they've realised that it's a gay or a lesbian ceremony, are quite horrified in doing it. Make sure that your celebrant is very comfortable.
One thing. So what would you want to make sure people were asking you, or if they don't, what do you really make sure they know?
People are always uncomfortable about fees, and so it's easy to crack that conversation and raise it yourself because they feel uncomfortable about asking you, but that's usually the last part of the conversation. I think they want to know how far they can push the envelope, and they feel very strict, structured because of their previous experiences, and so being able to give some examples of different ways that things have been have been shaped, and to encourage them to think about the worst celebrations they've been to as well as the best, and what elements of that they'd like to incorporate. Get them to go online. Google is full of both schmaltzy, cheesy, as well as wonderful examples.
There is the last couple I married came across some fantastic funky wedding sites or something like that.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.